Hanochi Minachem Eschem Beser Shara Veleitzim Yerushalayim. Shem should comfort you amongst the mourners of Tzion and Yerushalayim. That's a phrase, words of comfort that we try to somehow express when we go to a shiva house, and clearly there's a connection between someone's personal tragedy, mourning, and that of the mourners of Yerushalayim. Shem should comfort this personal mourner over his individual and personal tragedy, just as he will comfort all of the mourners of Yerushalayim. And indeed, it's all connected. And that's what really brings us together today, only 2 days before the national day of tragedy, Tisha B'Av, not only the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but the Gemara relates 5 different tragedies that happened on this fearful day of Tisha B'Av. And yet it's within our grasp, it's within our power to get it back and to have it rebuilt, to have it sent down from Shemayim. And if there's a connection between a personal tragedy, that of the national mourning over Yerushalayim, then indeed the inspiration that we can hope to get for our national mourning, the tragedy that we all should feel very connected to, we should be able to get from an individual. The Medrash relates that Rabbi Gamliel, the great Tana, had a neighbor who had a child who passed away. Her son died, and she would mourn at night when all was quiet. She would weep, and that stirred up Rabbi Gamliel, and he would cry because of that, over the Churban Beis HaMikdash, over the destruction of the temple. What was the connection? Just the other week, I had the privilege of hearing from Rav Asher Weiss from Yerushalayim, a great personality. And he explained, because Rav Gamliel understood, when we have Beis HaMikdash, then personal tragedies don't occur. And he understood that if there's someone who could weep over the death of a son, then it's all connected to our national mourning over Yerushalayim. And over the last few weeks, I've heard from many, and indeed for those who were privileged to be in the house of Shiva, coming to offer comfort and offer some shoulder to lean on, walked away even more inspired, walked away feeling uplifted, scratching our heads. What happened over here? The tables were turned. We came to offer comfort, and we walked away with great inspiration. And therefore, it's a privilege to welcome back Rabbi Mike Stern, who needs no introduction to us over here. But today he comes as our neighbor. We're Rabbi Gamliel, and we need something to help us focus our minds, hope to set our hearts straight about what we have to think of in these coming days. And Rabbi Mike is indeed our neighbor, more than our neighbor, our friend, for many, a mentor, a teacher, a rabbi. So without further ado, we introduce Rabbi Mike Stern.
Rabbanan. I'll speak loud, don't worry. Well, home. It's been our home. And it's really always been our home. What's extraordinary is not that we never forgot you. What's extraordinary is that you all never forgot us. From the moment we have left, we have felt that you've continued to grasp our hands and really not let go. And we have felt your care, and we have felt your love. My Rosh Hashiva, Rav Noach Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, went to Rav Huttner, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, for a bracha and for some eitzes before he went to start Eishet Torah. And Rav Huttner gave him three pieces of advice before starting Eishet Torah. One of them was, never expect Hakaras HaTov. Never expect gratitude for what you do in terms of outreach. But apparently, Rav Huttner never met all of you. That this seabor is Yosef in a clown. And we feel, Denise and I feel, we have received so much more from all of you. Much more than we ever felt that we gave to anybody here. So we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for always making us feel so cared for and so appreciated, because this really is unusual. Person that we all can't thank enough is Dr. Herb Kansky, who couldn't be here today. But Dr. Herb, not only did he bring Denise and I here, but he enabled us to be effective. He enabled us. And if there was anything that you might have received from Denise and I over these years, it's really to Dr. Herb's credit. Because he really made it happen for us here. And for that, we will always be full of gratitude for him. So before I begin, I just want to thank the Rosh Kollel, Rabbi Bieberfeld, for not only giving me an opportunity to be able to share some words with everybody here today, but, you know, there's a klal when you're sitting Shiva. The person who comes the furthest makes the biggest impression. So when the Rosh Kollel came to visit us during Shiva, it made a big impression. Rabbi Bieberfeld, as well as all of your calls, your cards, your donations have made us feel warm. It made an impression upon us, whether or not we spoke to you on the phone or whether or not we read your card. We really haven't read any cards that came in. We just can't. It's just too much. Shoshi was born in Philadelphia, a couple miles from here. This is where she started her carefree, barefoot Simchas HaChayim, and the beginning roots of her wonderful midos were developed right here with Torah Academy, with Laura Perman, of course, with Rabbi Levy, and all the wonderful teachers we had at Torah Academy. It does start at Torah Academy. Her formative years were here at Upland Terrace, Bala Avenue, and this is where we started. This is really our home. So I'd like to share with you some thoughts as to what lessons we could learn from Shoshi's Patira, and how these lessons, amidst the terrifying darkness that Denise and I have experienced, what light can be shed for us during this auspicious time of the 3 weeks at Tisha B'Av. So this is, I'm just going to have to go through this. As many of you know, Denise and I experienced our own personal Tisha B'Av this past year with our loss of Shoshi. It was a moment where we felt a removal of God's presence in our life. A feeling of, where is God now? And will he ever be back? A crumbling of our own Beis HaMikdash Ma'at. Shoshi's physical body could no longer contain the infinite light that stored inside of her. And a personal exile. Whereas life, as Denise and I had always known it, is gone in a moment. A completely new and untraveled pathway we would have to forge step by step, foot by foot, not knowing exactly where to go. On April 14th, around 6 p.m., my wife and I noticed that our daughter Shoshi was not yet back at home. And uncharacteristically, Denise was concerned. Our girls are very independent. Our girls are very capable, very responsible, smart, resourceful, good decision makers, feet on the ground. There were very few times ever was ever concerned about Shoshi and Devori. Denise was ready. And this is unusual that Denise was so concerned. And Denise was readying herself to go out. And we both had the same thought. At that point, the worst imaginable nightmare was she was in a dog park and some guy, pervert, grabbed her in or something like that. The Shoshi was just stunning, beautiful. It was as if Denise knew something by going out. I remember looking at the clock. It said 7:11. And I just had a sense of dread. I didn't really know why. So an angel must have taken Denise on her circuitous route until she happened onto a roped-off scene. All sorts of police cars, drivers out. And the policeman asked, like, what are you looking for? Denise said, my daughter's lost. So the policeman took Denise over to the side of the road, showed her the skateboard. She said, is this your daughter's? And Denise said, yeah, it's my daughter's. And that was the moment where this dread came to Denise. So she was struck by a driver crossing Palmetto Parkway in Boca Raton on a skateboard. Thank God, according to numerous reports, she died instantly, thank God. But one has exactly 7 seconds to traverse 6 lanes and 2 turning lanes. It was not a situation that had gone unnoticed by the burgeoning Jewish community of 1,000 families on both sides of this Palmetto Parkway. But, you know, who is time in the who is time? Who is the time and the motivation unless you're personally affected to do something about it? But nobody took it lightly. Shoshi rarely crossed that road by herself. I mean, she crossed with Devori, her best friend, sister. But all of a sudden, a knock was on the door, and the policeman came in, and no words had to be said. What do you say at that moment? What do you say? What do you say? What do you say to your wife? What do you say to God? What do you say to your kids? The most unimaginable, unspeakable, unbelievable, life-changing moment just happened. And life as we knew it is gone. You know, there will never be I'm not saying we're the only ones ever in this position, but for us, we will never have a carefree moment ever. A lighthearted moment ever. Again. Without some sort of something. Never. How are you going to tell the children they've lost a sibling? And how am I going to tell my mother who just lost her husband? My mother lost a son. Now she's got to tell her she lost a granddaughter. And there we are in the car, going to Delray Medical Center to identify her. But we knew it was her. All her personables were at the accident. And I'm thinking right now, in the car, in the Delray Medical Center, how does a mother and father say goodbye to their daughter? It occurred to me the soul was hovering over the body, and I was going to go talk to her neshama. And what was I going to say? Until we meet again? How does one find the words where there are no words? Or they just don't mean anything. And how are we ever going to sit around the Shabbos table ever again and smile? How are we going to pick up the pieces? And what's the new normal? There was life before Shoshi, and there's life after Shoshi. So today's topic is finding light amidst this darkness. For Denise and I personally, finding light, and for everybody here, finding light amidst the darkness of the 3 weeks of Tisha B'Av. So I'd like to suggest, to find the light that we are all seeking, we first have to identify and be real with the darkness. To feel the darkness. I believe it's within the darkness itself that that's where we will find the light. It is within the darkness that will propel us forward to grasp a hold of the light and make that light part of our lives. Now, thank God, for many of us, thank God, it's not easy to find and see and feel the darkness for any sustained period of time. We experience it for a moment, and we go back to our normal everyday life. Thank God, average life, day to day, mundane. You know, you hear about somebody's tragedy or sickness, you don't know them, you're like, I'll say some tehillim, you make a mental note, I'll daven for them, you go back to your life. That's the way we're designed. It's nothing for us to be ashamed of. That's just normal. But sometimes it gets closer to home. Someone you know well, you share their misery, you share their disappointments and their heartbreaks. But you get back to your life. And sometimes we're touched by the constant calamity around us in the world. I mean, you can't open up the paper without 24 Sunnis died at a funeral, you know, from a terrorist bombing. Evil, death, illness, suffering. Unless you're personally affected, you go back to your life. And thank God, Hashem does not expect us really to live with the darkness of this reality for a sustained period of time on a day-to-day basis. Normal life presents a mundane curtain. A curtain of life that we don't often see behind. But when we do, it's not for a long period of time. And we get back to life right at the curtain. If we lived with all the pain and all the suffering and all the illness that lies behind the reality of the curtain, we'd be paralyzed, we'd be overwhelmed. Who do I help first? Who do I daven for? If you were just walked with the awareness of who's sick and ill around you, you wouldn't have any time for yourself. And then there are many people besides Denise and I who have experienced a tragedy that our life has been altered every single moment. Every moment we live, every moment we think, every moment we talk, where there is no normal. That's a kind of darkness that's easy to sustain itself a little bit. And that's the darkness that takes us beyond the curtain of life. So how do we find here, how do we all find a certain aspect of that darkness to be able to see it in the broader context of the 3 weeks at Tisha B'Av, that we could learn from it, and we can grow from it, and we can be inspired by it. So there we sat, Shiva, and I heard time and time and time again, Hamakom Yinachah, mourners of Zion and Yerushalayim. And after a while I thought, who are these mourners? Who are the mourners of Zion and Yerushalayim? Where are they? And once I find them, I just want to know what they've been doing up until now. It wasn't really clear. It was just words just being thrown at me. Hamakom, right. Anyway, line up, sit right here. Hamakom. It's beautiful. What does it mean? I don't know what it means. So I started to think about my last 25 years of my Jewish experiences. I started when I was 29 years old. Up until now, you hear a lot about the mourners of Zion and Yerushalayim. Rosh Kollel mentioned it. I was like, oh yeah, the mourners of Zion and Yerushalayim. And the more I thought about it, it's all over the place. It's in everyday Jewish life everywhere. It happens to be, we're in the moment right now, with the 3 weeks, we are supposed to be the mourners of Zion and Yerushalayim. Right now, we are. So it's an everyday Jewish life. I'd like to point out a couple of things that show this. So when we sing Grace After the Meals on Shabbos, Gershon, this is for you. We're not going to go into Niggun mode. But every time I practice this, I was thinking of you. Shir HaMaalos, right? When Hashem will return the captivity of Zion. Zion is captured. Whatever we have in Israel today is not the Tzion, it's not the Zion that we're waiting for. Zion's in our daily prayer, Besechazena. May our eyes behold your return to Zion in compassion. Blessed are you, Hashem, who restores his presence to Zion. We are mourning the lack of Hashem's presence. Uva l'tzion goel, a redeemer shall come to Zion, Tzion. And further in Shir HaMaalot it says, we will be like dreamers. That when Tzion is finally redeemed by Mashiach, and we have full knowledge of God and the clarity we seek, and the world we want, only at that time would that new knowledge resonate so much for us, the new normal of God's presence, then we'll realize that we were dreamers. We got used to mediocrity. We got used to complacency. We got used to being not inspired. We got used to a compromised reality. We got used to a lack of justice. We got used to a world not rooted in reality. And it will feel like it was a dream. Because that's not our life. And then only when Zion is returned, when Zion is returned, only then will our mouths be filled with laughter. But before that, not. No, not real laughter. Our tongue will be with glad song. Before that, no. Hashem's presence is missing in Zion and our lives. And yet, we go around our lives as normal. It's not. And how about that other introductory paragraph we're supposed to be reading before we do the grace after the meals? During the week, the Shulchan Aruch, Al Naharis Babel, by the rivers of Babylon. Why are we in Babylon? Babylon's Iraq. Because we were exiled from the Beis HaMikdash. We were exiled. And there we sat and we wept. And we remembered Zion. If I forget you, O Yerushalayim, let my right hand forget its skill. Let my tongue adhere to the palate. If I fail to elevate Yerushalayim above my greatest joy. No, Denise and I got married in Israel. We had our chasana in Yerushalayim, but we had to have it at Moshav Ora. Where's Moshav Ora? Not in the site of the Makom HaMikdash. Not in the site where the temple stood. You want music? Some lenient poskim. Some. Outside of the Makom HaMikdash, you can have music. You want to have music in the Makom HaMikdash? You can get a guy from Geula with a drum. That's it. A midrash on Tehillim, where the Shachar Tov teaches that if a man plasters his house, he buys a house, he covers his house with plaster, he must leave a little spot uncovered. If a man prepares a feast, he must leave something out. If a woman adorns herself, she must leave something out. The ashes we place on the chasen, on the groom, at his chasana, the ashes, right before his wedding, breaking the glass, both symbolize the destruction of Yerushalayim. Right then, at our own wedding? At our own joy? Our own wedding? Yeah, at your own wedding. Because our joy is not complete. For us personally, we're getting married. Awesome. But how about others? How about God? How about His world? How about others in God's world? So much pain, so much suffering, so much turmoil. My joy cannot be complete if others are suffering. We don't really have the luxury to go yippee-yay and forget about ourselves. When the Shekhinah is in exile, have we forgotten, God forbid, how to make the distinction between what's the real life we seek, one of peace and one of love and brotherhood and unity and truth, goodness, perfection, and the mundane illusion that we live in day to day. All of these things I mentioned are constant reminders of what we have lost. Never a day with complete joy, never a day without being focused on what life's about, what we are aiming for, and what our goal is. That is what it means to be a mourner of Tzion and Yerushalayim. That no matter what, you remember what the scorecard of life is, what you're aiming for, and what your goal is. That is a mourner of Tzion and Yerushalayim. And I did experience that there are some people that are real with this. I was in the old city in Yerushalayim for 7 years. I knew people who got up for Tikkun Chatzos, special prayers to mourn over the destruction of the Mikdash. They go to sleep when it, as soon as it becomes dark, they daven Maariv, they go to sleep, they wake up. I couldn't believe that people do this. I look back upon it now, it was like, oh, that's the right, that's a good thing to do, that's a great thing to do. Tikkun Chatzos. And the more I thought about it, it's like, wow, I get it now. Denise and I also, like the mourners of Tzion and Yerushalayim, will never, ever have a carefree moment again. Ever. We caught up with the reality. We finally caught up with what Hashem wants Denise and I to understand, to know, and to live with. That we are amongst the mourners of Tzion Yerushalayim. And just like the rabbis intended for the Jewish people never to live the life the same as it was before the destruction. Never to feel unbridled joy. Never to feel completely carefree. Even at your wedding. We understand. Shabbos has been so difficult without Shoshi. The message for us here is that all of us, no matter how much of our personal joy is, how comfortable our lives are, our joy cannot be complete with others suffering. And I think about it all the time. What an expectation of Hashem! What is Hashem's expectation of us? The rest of our lives, every single day I live, I have to experience the loss. That is unbelievable. But that's his expectation. To be real with the darkness, to be real with the pain, to be real with the suffering, to be real with the confusion. Oy. So we are, all of us, are in the midst of the 3 weeks in Tisha B'Av. And we must realize the darkness that we are in. The darkness of the Jewish people. We're exiled from God's presence. We're exiled from Yerushalayim. Our holy temple is destroyed. Our clarity is dim. Our inspiration is low. And we can't properly serve Hashem. We got to do something about it. We just can't let it be like this. This is a call to action. The world needs God's love. The world needs God's light. We got a lot of work to do. Look, I really don't want this level of intensity. I really don't want this heaviness. And I really don't want the responsibility. And I really don't want to be this awake. But I'm awake now. And this is the actual, it's what I came to share. I came to share that being awake is the light amidst the darkness of Shoshi's Patira. Let me say it again, because that's the essential point. Being awake is actually the light of Shoshi's Patira amidst the darkness that Hashem wants for Mike and Denise, and a reality all of us. All of us. I call it living life, not at the mundane curtain, but I call it living life beyond the curtain. The curtain again being the normal day-to-day life as we know it. But King Shlomo teaches us what it means to live life behind the curtain. He says, it's better to go to a house of mourning than it is to go to a simcha. Really? Because I've been to both. I choose a simcha. King Shlomo says, better to go to a house of mourning. I mean, what are we here anyway? To do errands? Errands. I'm so sick of errands, I can't even tell you. What a treadmill. It almost seems there's never enough time to just take care of the errands that you have justifiable responsibility for. I mean, you gotta shop, you gotta slap, you gotta cook, you got carpools, you got something breaks, and bill, it's ridiculous, and you don't even have enough time for that. It's all mundane living, and it's legitimate. But is this why I'm here? Is this why I'm here on earth? This is why the Almighty took time to create me? I should have an errand list every day? And in truth, we need these things got to get done. We got to eat. We got to go to work. We got to shop. We got to raise our families. We got to have clean clothing. This is a conundrum that I'm not sure I have any thoughts about how to answer that question. It's a conundrum. However, every once in so often we get a glimpse at life behind the curtain and we're awake. And the question is, how do we stay awake? Sometimes Hashem wakes us up in a very minimal way. We have an important exam, a special anniversary, a job interview. Our child accomplishes something that is worthy of nachas. We get a piece of jewelry. And for that moment, those moments, your life is lifted, you're lifted up into a different dimension, and you're awake. But then the curtain turns back very quickly. And then there's a whole other another level of heightened living. God forbid they found a spot on your liver. Your kid's been coughing for 2 months, you don't know why. Your mother, God forbid, is in the ICU unit, and God's starting to really get your attention. And you're really awake. And then, God forbid, your spouse is abusing you, you undergo surgery, God forbid you get a divorce, God forbid your ex is acrimonious, your kids don't seem to follow in your path. God has your attention now. Awake? Yes. Pleasant? No. But being awake means realizing the preciousness of life. The preciousness of each moment. And that is the light amidst the darkness of Shoshi's Patira. Let's not wait for tragedy to strike. No one is more awake and alert than the person on the other side of the curtain. It's a gift from Shoshi to us. So, I've gotten this question before. Really not, because this is my first time doing this talk. But, what is life behind the curtain? What is life? What's been life behind the curtain, Mike? Because the curtain has peeled back, and it has stayed back. And it's really, for me, seeing reality unmasked. Life has not been back to normal since Shoshi passed away. And the seconds seem to go slow. Very slow. And we are totally awake. He has our attention. I feel like we have a clarity right now that's showing us a far bigger picture with more perspective. Whereby somehow we touch the magnitude that is pregnant in every moment and how each moment can add up to what your life is about. The deeper realization of the preciousness of our moments can certainly help us live with more significance and meaning. And it's a whole new level of heightened living that we have has resulted from this loss for us. Certainly for me, mundane things, as they normally are, even before Shoshi's passing, are really a drag. I hate errands. But now I feel like, how can anybody have an airing list? And what is the stupidity that is on the TV and the newspapers and magazines? And what the heck are people spending their time talking about? Color? Do you think I care about color? I don't care what color. Buy it whatever color. You're reading Oprah magazine? You're playing Candy Crush? I hate that game. I mean, how much time can you post on Facebook? I appreciate people looking at my blog, whatever. But really, it can't be the highlight of the day is let's examine the shopping offers in the mailbox. Ooh. I really feel in our home a lot of pettiness has been dropped. Living on the other side of the curtain is where one can truly see, one can truly feel, one can truly hear, one can truly give, and one can truly love. For me now, colors, they do seem to be more beautiful, and my kids' laughter seems to be funnier. And I feel like my wife is gorgeous. And my friends and family, they're more endearing to me. Because we're awake. I can never look at my wife and kids in the same way as before. It's not that I can't, it's just like I just don't. I can more easily see the greatness in all the people in my family's lives, what their greatness is. And I don't seem to be as critical and as bothered. And there's more peace in our home, Liai and Hara, than ever. And it seems that everybody's more focused on what's important. And I think we're more forgiving of each other's stupidity and idiosyncrasies. A couple of months ago, if you had asked me, that was just a life behind the curtain, if you had asked me a couple of months ago, well, Shoshi kind. Yeah. Shoshi have a Simchas Achayim. Yeah. Does she have a good eye? Yeah. Yeah. Does she listen to you, good Kibbutz Avim? Yeah. Now, after the fact, everything is added up to an incredible tapestry that makes Shoshi's character and legacy seem so large to me. She had greatness. But this is the greatness that exists in the people sitting next to you, people eating in your house, people sleeping in the next bed to you. We don't as easily see the greatness in day-to-day life unless you're behind the curtain. What an opportunity missed for Denise and I that we didn't really see Shoshi's greatness to the extent that she was great. And she was. She was. So, you know, it's like, thank God we're not living this thing that our daughter passed away and everybody says all these beautiful things and it wasn't really true. It's true. It was true about Shoshi, but we didn't see it. Do we really know who our children and who our spouses are? You've got to get out of your head and start looking. Look to see who they are. Now, and as hard as it really seems, life behind the curtain gives you an opportunity to be as real with God as He always wanted you to be. It was really put into perspective by something I heard from Eric Coopersmith, Rabbi Coopersmith, the CEO of Eshet Torah. And he told me what Reb Noach Weinberg told him after what Reb Noach experienced after the patira of his father. And Reb Noach was quoted as saying, when his father passed away, he thought to himself, only a mourner can say Kaddish in a proper way. See, Kaddish is entirely a praise of Hashem, and it's not about the deceased. And when you're a mourner, and it's personal, and you see things as they really are, then you see God's hand in everything. So of course, this heightened awareness can work both ways. It could be fear, it could paralyze you, or it can energize you. If I was living to change the world before, I'm doubly motivated now. If I was driven with a desire to make a difference in this world, I'm doubly motivated now. When the curtain becomes open for you, Hashem is shaking you just to get your attention. Hashem's giving you or us an opportunity to realize the preciousness of the moments, the preciousness of life. Let us realize the opportunity before us today, that we have the opportunity today to join the mourners of Sion Yerushalayim. And with that, we can bring Mashiach. And we can return to Yerushalayim, and we can build the Beis HaMikdash. You know, all year round, I heard this idea from Rabbanit Yamima Mizrahi. We just had this video, we just showed her in our house, two showings on one day. I don't know how many people have heard of her. Yamima Mizrahi. We had 110 women in Boca Raton come, and there's nobody even in town in Boca in the summer. But this lady's on fire, and she gave a beautiful idea here. She said, all year round, we can console ourselves that the glass is half full, not half empty. Don't look at what you don't have. You know, if your husband's bugging you in this area, at least he's like this. Your kid is not like this, but at least you have this. We console ourselves all year, and we have the attitude of gratitude all year. But she says, during the 3 weeks, you look at the glass half empty. You know, no, I want it all. I'm sick and tired of the brokenness in our lives. And we got to do something about it. I mean, that's how I got married. I got married at 33. That's relatively not so early on when you're a bachur in yeshiva. But how did I get married? If somebody asked me that, I was like, I had yeyush. I was like, I give up. And that's how I got married. When you can't, I don't know what to do. I got to make something good happen. I got to go for the light. It's positive dissatisfaction. We'll build the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so now that we're wide awake here, we're all wide awake. We're in the home stretch here in the last 15 minutes. And let's say we're all mourners. Let's say we've all joined the team. We're all mourners of Tzion Yerushalayim now. We're all mourners. What are we going to do from here? How are we going to go forward? So I'd like to take one essential lesson of Shoshi's Patira, or Shoshi herself, one essential lesson from Shoshi that we can take away and address the 3 weeks in Tisha B'Av. So if we go back to the original root of the problem, we all know the Gemara in Masechet Yuma teaches us that the root cause of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was causeless hatred. Baseless hatred. A lack of Jewish unity. It just appears that we didn't care enough for each other. We didn't respect each other enough. We didn't accept, tolerate, and appreciate each other enough. We didn't love each other enough. We didn't do for each other enough. We just were in our own worlds just a little too much. And we didn't realize that our national mission and responsibility as part of the Jewish people of being a light unto the nations starts with how we treat each other. That's how it all starts. We can't be a light to the nations until we're a light to ourselves and each other. And when we understand that love is all there is, we are united as the Jewish people. And that's where it's at. Chafetz Chaim teaches us that which exiled us, if not corrected, is preventing us from bringing Mashiach and the redemption of God's presence. So what's the one thing from Shoshi's life and her patira that can inspire us at this time to bring back all that we and the Jewish people have lost? So it's not a coincidence that Shoshi left this world during the time of Sfira. the time period between the second night of Pesach, we count 50 days until Shavuos, and these are days of mourning. We don't listen to music, we don't get haircuts, we don't get married. Why? We remember and we mourn the loss of 24,000 students who died of Rabbi Akiva's. 24,000 students! The Gemara teaches us the cause of the calamity. Shlo nahugu kovod zelazeh. According to their expectations of them, of God's expectations, they simply didn't show each other enough respect. Or at least is what was expected of them. They didn't value each other as much as they could. The unique and special neshama in every other one of their colleagues. And Shoshis Batira at that time is to point us in the direction of how we need to love and respect and appreciate each other. Baseless love, Jewish unity, the remedy for baseless hatred. So Shoshi really appreciated others. This is one of her great and gorgeous gifts of Shoshi. She saw others for who they truly were in a very simple, uncomplicated, normal way. Very. And that way, as I said in the eulogy of her eulogy, that shows she got it. She got what life was all about. She embodied it. She lived it. And if we take her lead, if we take Shoshi's lead, it will lead us back. So what did Shoshi get exactly? She affirmed, she validated, she respected, she accepted, treasured every person she met. Shoshi treated everybody as if they were B'Tselem Elokim. And therefore there's something to love in everyone. And that they're worthy of love. In a world where so many people, unwittingly, unconsciously, tend to criticize, marginalize, condemn, and gossip about others, and therefore trying to lift themselves up by putting others down, for Shoshi, it was not a matter of how popular you were, how pretty you were, what school you went to, where the collarbone is sticking out or not, or where the dress was. Didn't matter to Shoshi what side of the tracks you were on. More specifically, she went to Beis Yaakov, arguably a little more to the right. She was in the Bas Mitzvah program with the Hillel girls. People in the community say it's a little more to the left. She went over to the circle of BRS, where the girls, they're wearing their skirt. She went to camp at Gan Izzy. She's friends with all the Chabad families and all the Chabad girls. It didn't matter to Shoshi. You know who came to the Shiva? The AC guy. The air conditioning guy. He knew Shoshi. The mailman. The UPS guy. The gardener. Howie the bug guy came. Howie's here, honey. But they all knew Shoshi. Shoshi got what many failed to get in a lifetime. And we could do this too. Let's not make a mistake. And everybody knows Denise and I. She's not this base. Nobody's in our family is this base Yaakov girl, art scroll book. That's idle, quiet. This is just not our family. Right? Shoshi was a normal girly girl, paints her toes, she likes shopping, right? Her aspirations were owning a shopping mall. That is a normal girl. But she excelled at creating peace and love. I saw that whenever she went into any circle, she would necessarily seek out the girls less popular, less pretty, less in. And she forced the issue. In a quiet way. She was not forceful, Shoshi. She just was. She wasn't working too hard, which is an unbelievable lesson. I feel like, and those of you who know me, I'm always working hard. I'm sweating. Shoshi was not sweating. She was graceful, beautiful, just integrated into her. And I have to just, this is a side point. I'm almost done. But side point is, I always had this, you know, I'm a Baal Tshuva, so I like inspiration. I was in Yerushalayim, and, you know, and like, at Beis Yaakov, they don't come home like, oh, that class was great today. Oh, that teacher's so inspired. Never. Like once, they had the Sneas teacher from out of town. Once they came home this year, inspired. Once. And I was like, oh, we never asked somebody like me to come speak there, or any of my friends. They wouldn't ask about Tshuva. What are we going to have? What do we have to offer? They're not really going to ask us. And they don't. They wouldn't. During the Shiva, I don't know why, this is just, I'm just adding this aside. During the Shiva and all the time from then since, I have no more questions about Beis Yaakov. No more questions, Your Honor. From worth people, it's different. It's just different. When I see, I can't begin to tell you the greatness that was shown by the girls at Beis Yaakov, the girls at BRS, the girls at Hillel, and the Chabad families. I cannot tell you the greatness of these girls in our schools down there. They're doing something right. And it's just like, it's not the way that we were raised. It's just not. But it works. Okay, let's finish up here. There is a finish up. I'm sorry it's so long. You know, I had to cut away. I already started a second talk. That's how much stuff there was here. So let's be real. Here's the last, this is the wind-up. Let's be real when we daven. Three times a day in the Amidah, in the Shemona Esrei, three times a day, these are the words that we see. Hashem, gather our exiles from the four corners of the earth to our land. May you speedily cause the offspring of your servant to flourish. Mashiach, we hope for your salvation all day long. And to Yerushalayim, your city, may you return, please, in compassion. May you rest within it, as you have spoken. May you build it soon in our days as an eternal structure. Turn us away, not empty-handed. Be gracious to us, answer us, hear our prayers. Restore the service to the Holy of Holies of your temple, and may our eyes see your return to Zion. And then we conclude, establish peace, goodness, blessing, life, graciousness, compassion, kindness upon all of us and your people Israel. And lastly, the lesson of the whole talk. Bless us, our Father, as one. Bless us as one. Unified whole. Together. We're a team. We're one team. With the light of your countenance. And we have got to be one. And then, God willing, Hashem will bless us all in every season, in every hour, with peace. I thank you so much for your, so much for the opportunity. Very much so. It was very important to me. And I really appreciate everybody came so much. Tonight, not that I'm, you know, you're not obligated, but I'm just letting you know. I felt like I did wanted to share some lessons in this kind of forum. But tonight will be more like at the Gottliebs tonight, at Richard Andrew Gottlieb, more like, I'm not saying I'm sitting Shiva, but I just like more informally, just as we would normally see each other and talk. I don't have a lot of hours when I'm here, but if you know, I just thought tonight I would sit and talk a little more informally as we would if we had been together during Shiva in a certain way. And thank you. Appreciate it. What time? Oh, 7:30 tonight at the Gottliebs.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I just wanted to mention that, first of all, we thank our co-sponsors, Rabbi Withalt Walls and Esha Torah. And in the back, there are available Shoshi bracelets, as well as if you'd like to make a donation to Rabbi Without Walls, you feel free to do so in the back. We will have mincha now in about 2 minutes.
Suggested is $2 per bracelet.
Suggested donation is $3 per bracelet.
Of
course, they're doing wonderful things with the money, but of course, any donation is appreciated. Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Mike, and thank you, everyone, for joining us.